In Scotland, when friends get together, they blether. When these three friends happen to be Scottish Blue Badge tourist guides, you can be sure that the country that they're so passionate about will be right at the heart of their discussions. Be it contemporary or historical, culinary or cultural, reminiscence or anecdote, from accommodation to zoos, the chat will range right across the entire alphabet of topics and issues that are live and happening in Scotland right now. We hope that you'll join us. There's nothing to beat a richt good blether.
And you could also join in our blethers on social media. You can find us as at Scottish Blethers on both Facebook and Instagram. We post additional content during the week that supports the podcast episode.
We love making the podcasts and would love it if you could share them with your friends and leave a review on the platform of your choice.
Hello and welcome to today's episode of Scottish Blethers. I'm Liz Lister.
And I'm Helen Houston.
And this episode is due to go out on Valentine's Day. So at the moment, it's, they say that love is in the air, Helen.
Oh, be still my beating heart, Liz.
Well, I think it's a sign of the times that, you know, a young man's fancy turns to love, an old man's fancy turns to what are we having for the dinner.
That's right, yes. Yeah, no, it's quite exciting, Valentine's Day, and, you know, it takes you back a few years, doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
But things have changed over the years, Liz. Things have really changed.
They have so much. So, you know, we've looked at love songs before and all the romantic love. We thought that this time we'd take a look at the sort of the hard facts of love in Scotland. We've been looking at a number of surveys, both official and lighthearted. So that's the theme for this week's episode. I suppose if you want to get the hard facts about what's happening in Scotland, then you go to the National Records of Scotland.
Yes, they're a fantastic resource. The records of absolutely everything, births, deaths, marriages, all sorts of things are there. So it's worthwhile just looking at that if you're checking your genealogy, really.
Yeah, it's, as we call it, births, marriages and deaths, or hatches, matches and dispatches. I think we've done one on that before, if I remember correctly.
I think we did, yes, we definitely did.
I think I'm forgetting how many we've done. But of course, the National Records of Scotland can only give you the record if it's registered. And yes, in our day, things were very simple. You were either married, and if you were married, you had the choice of whether you did it in a church or a registry office, you know, so a religious wedding or a legal binding, or you were a bidean.
That's, I love that. I love that bidean. I remember when my husband was ill, the doctor came to the door and I answered the door, and he just kind of pushed past me, the doctor did. I went in to see my husband, Graham, and then shut the door in my face because I was just going to go into the room too. And then Graham called me through about 10 minutes later and said, "The doctor's wondering if you're my bidean." I said, "No, I'm his wife and I'm one of your patients."
Well, I think we should explain to some of our listeners what a bidean is. Bide in Scotland means to live, right? So a bidean was somebody that lived in. Right, friends with benefits, if you like. But looking back on it, it only ever applied to the woman. It never, you didn't have a bidean man.
No, well, of course, I suppose it was at that time too when they were, I won't say popular, but it was the man who was the earner. So it was normally his house that you bided in.
Yep. Yeah. So we're still, you're still common use, still used today. It's his bidean.
Yes.
If it's a man, it's usually a toy boy, but a woman, it's a bidean. I suppose you'd call it a common law wife.
Yes, yes, I think it would be. And they had no rights whatsoever at that time. When your time was up, your time was up.
Yeah, but that was the big concern, was that they didn't have the rights, the legal rights of a formal wife or husband. So, you know, when we started to look at this, Helen, it's all got so complicated since our day. Huge changes in the types of union that are legally recognised. So we've still got marriages. Now, do you know the difference between a marriage and a civil partnership?
Oh, now that's one that you think you know the difference, but you don't, you're not really too sure. Liz, explain that one to us.
Well, a marriage is formed by vows. That's the important thing. And traditionally, it would normally have been performed in a church. It would have been a religious ceremony. But of course, as I said, you can perform a marriage in a registry office. But after you've conducted the ceremony, then you sign a marriage certificate. So that's the vows and the marriage certificate are the important things about that. But now we have huge numbers of civil partnerships.
And a civil partnership, they still have to sign a certificate. They still have to legally register their partnership, haven't they?
They do, but there's no vows. There are no vows taken. Well, I think that maybe they could choose to take vows. I'm not sure about that.
Personal vows to each other, possibly. Yeah.
One of the other big differences is that in a marriage, your partner is referred to as your spouse. But in a civil partnership, there are a civil partner. And they have most of the same rights and responsibilities as in a marriage, but not quite all the legal rights. So I think there's been some cases about pension and property, but certainly a lot more protection than you'd get if you were just a bidee-in.
Yes, it seems quite unfair. They go through the ceremony that kind of they're binding each other to each other, that they don't have all the legal rights.
And of course, that's a very good point, Helen, that I hadn't thought of. But if we go back, not too far back in Scottish history, it would have been a hand-fasting ceremony. They would literally have been bound together.
Oh, that's right, yes. And in fact, in some ceremonies, I've seen this in marriages, religious marriages, where the priest actually, or the minister, binds his, I don't know what they call the thing to put round their necks, but they bind that round the hands.
Yeah.
Just as doing a blessing.
And if you go up to the Highlands and Islands, quite often you find the hand-fasting stone where it had a hole in it. And they put their hands through this. And it was a very, very good idea because it was a trial marriage, if you like. You know, it was a hand fasting, it was a commitment to one another. But if it broke down, then it wasn't a legally recognised marriage. So a good way of try before you buy.
I always have a wee smile when I think of that, Liz, because I think in my day growing up, my goodness, that would be so frowned upon. Yeah. That if you even thought about going to try before you buy, you would be, oh my goodness. Oh, you think the whole world had come to an end, you know. Not that I ever experienced that, Liz, of course, you know that.
You were never a bidee. All right, no. I've got the message. But of course, the big change was same-sex couples. So in 2004, we had this huge move forward where you got the Civil Partnership Act, and that allowed same-sex couples to enter into a civil partnership. So they had the protection, legal protection, which had been lacking before. And then in 2014, that same right of a civil partnership rather than a marriage was given to mixed sex couples. So you now have the option whether you want to have a marriage or you just want to have your partnership recognised by a civil agreement, but both are legally binding.
It was interesting when the idea of marriage for same-sex couples came up with the Act. That caused great consternation in many of the churches. You know, people believing that that was not right. And it did cause, and I think the General Assembly of the Church of Scotland at that time, they kind of opened it up at one assembly and then closed it down and said, just all go back to your congregations and think and discuss so that when we meet again, we know what the feeling of the church was. And in fact, ministers can choose whether to conduct a same-sex marriage or not. But the majority choose to do that now.
Yeah, that was the final piece of the puzzle. In May 2022, the General Assembly of the Church of Scotland agreed that you could have a religious marriage. You could have a minister could marry same-sex couples in church. But I got my figures wrong there because 2014, it was that rather than just a civil partnership, same-sex couples could actually marry. And then it was 2021 that the opportunity for civil partnerships became available to mixed sex. So it's all so complicated, but it's just how we have progressed so much to recognise and include and diversity and all of that. So very complex situation. But of course, all of that only shows us the registered legal partnerships. And increasingly, people are just rejecting that and choosing not to have any legal binding relationship. And we don't know, the only way that we can find out about the state of relationships in Scotland is then through the national census.
Oh, yes, and that has its own problems, because in the past, Liz, and you said you don't remember this because you're so young, that when it came round to national census, it always happened to be on something, the 2011, 2001, it was always in every 10 years, the people were employed to go around every household in the UK and hand in the census form, which had to be filled out on a particular day. So they were all given out ready for that particular day. And then the census people came around and collected the completed form and checked it over, just made sure that everything was answered, and then took it away. So you got a much higher percentage of people completing it. But the recent one, the 2021, which was then delayed till 2022 because of COVID, people said, oh, I can't be bothered signing this, because it was sent through the post and you had to do it and then you had to send it back or do it online. And people said, I can't be bothered. So they got a very low percentage, although it is a legal requirement for you to do it.
Yeah, I mean, it used to be taken so seriously. And of course, that's, as you said, that's all the information if you want to go back and do your genealogy. But it's so much more valuable as well, because the census is the official count of every person and household in the country. So it gives lots of information that the Scottish Government use for planning. You know, things like the type of accommodation, the age, gender, health, employment, religious and ethnic groups. Lots of questions this time on language. Do you speak Scots? Do you speak Gaelic? Do you understand Scots? You know, what is Scots? So very complicated this time, but you could see the sort of questions that were taken priority in this census. But in the past, you would never have dared fail to complete the census. And now when they sent people to follow up and see why households had not returned theirs, do you say it was just, I couldn't be bothered, I wasn't interested. Times have changed.
Times have changed. And I remember when I worked at the college, that I did quite a lot of work with some of the local government officers, and they were consciously using the census figures to plan the facilities, for example, in a town or a village where many people went to retire. It was a kind, they would plan the facilities for the ageing population in the village. No point in putting nursery schools in there if the population's average age was going to be over 60 in the next 10 years.
Yeah, you know, it's essential for planning, but it also gives you really good information about people's relationships, which is what we're talking about today. But we've got to remember that we're working on data from 2011. And just imagine how that has changed in the year since 2011. So they say that they'll start to release the 2022 census information in 2023. So we're waiting on it. But a lot of it is not unexpected. The fact that women outnumbered men by about 150,000 in Scotland, more women than men.
Oh, well, I suppose that gives some girls a good excuse. Oh, I don't have a boyfriend. Well, I couldn't expect to have one. I'm being generous. I'm leaving other girls to have the boyfriend.
This is it. Yeah, good for men to move into Scotland. Also, as you would expect, the number of married people decreasing over the years, going down steadily.
Yes, I remember just a few weeks ago, our local minister was saying that, you know, he is called upon to conduct marriages so seldom nowadays. A lot of blessings. People will have a marriage, a civil marriage, a registry office marriage, but they would like it blessed by the minister, but they're not going for the religious vows.
Yeah, that just one in five marrying in church now, which was a real surprise to me. I mean, when you think about it, I can understand it, but you just don't think that, because in our day, it was the norm to be married in church.
Although, interestingly enough, my grandmother and grandfather were married in my grandmother's father's house down in West Linton, Romano Bridge, and that would have been early 1900s. I'm not sure when they got married, but my father was the third child and he was 1912.
Yeah, that brings in another factor in that Scotland is different from England.
Yes.
There's a number of differences, and one of them being the fact that a minister could marry you outside the church, or a registrar. So you didn't need to be married in church, whereas I think you did in England. Not sure about down there, but I
think you did.
And also a lot of people come up to Gretna Green, still elope to Gretna Green, because you can get married at a younger age than you can in England. So possibly an addition for the future at Gretna Green.
Oh, yes, we could do Gretna Green. That would be a good one.
Yeah. And then when you were talking about looking for love, if you're looking for singles, More of them are found in cities in Scotland than in rural populations. I suppose that's no surprise, because if you think about it, lots of students, lots of younger people working in the cities. So if you want to find the singles, you go, particularly Glasgow, 49% of the population above 16 are single, and Edinburgh, 45%. Whereas if you go to places like Shetland and the Borders, much lower rate of singletons.
But it's interesting, Liz. I mean, going back, you know, when you're single and you're looking for love, as if we must keep going back to our title, looking for love, or love is in the air. You went to the dancing to find love.
You did, yeah.
And you would go, that would be the, well, in my day, Liz, because you're so much younger, you'd line up boys on one side and girls on the other side, and the band leader would say, gentlemen, take your partners for, and the boys would all shuffle across the floor and grab, you know, take a girl by the hand and on the dance floor. Sometimes you got a lady's choice. That was when the girls raced across the floor to get the man of the boy of their choice.
You're bringing me out in cold sweats here, Helen, because that, I don't remember going to the dancing like that. No, oh. I was never at that. But when it was the school dances at Christmas time in the school, the weeks before the dances, you used to go to the gym to learn all the Gay Gordons, right, and Canadian Barn Dance and
social
Bernard's
dancing.
Waltz, social dancing, that's it. But exactly the same, boys on one side, girls on the other. And the boys always had to do the picking, which is very, very unfair. But if you imagine the scene, right, you've got all of your two or three classes all in the gym, and things haven't changed because I got picked out because I was talking when I shouldn't have been. Oh. And the punishment was I had to hang from the wall bars.
No.
For the next dance, I had to hang from the wall. But that's emotional cruelty now. Can you imagine the embarrassment, the ruddy red face that I got? Yes. I'm traumatised.
Oh, gosh, Liz. Oh, well, no, the worst thing for me was that when all your girlfriends round about you were picked to go on the dance floor and you're left there and you're kind of shuffling to another group of girls, oh, my goodness, they've all gone. Then shuffle to another one, oh, my goodness, they've all gone. Until, horror of horrors, you're left standing like a wallflower. And then the teacher, that side, the teacher would say, well, I'll dance with you.
No, it was worse because there was more girls than boys, as we've just said. It was dancing with a girl, and I always had to be the boy. So to this day, I can't dance to save myself because I always try to do the boys' bit.
You always try to lead, Liz, is that
I
it?
I do that, sorry about that. That's where it all stems from.
It all stems. Oh, well, at least we now know. That's a good thing. But the dances were great things. They were crowded out. I grew up in Stirling, and the Golden Lion had great dances on a Saturday night. And then sometimes we'd go up to Dunblane Hydro to the dancing. And there were some beautiful dancers there. Talk about Strictly Come Dancing. Goodness me, they could have been on. I mean, I was never a good dancer. But no, I liked going to the dancing. But the big thing is how you found love at the dancing, because the worst possible thing could be not getting anybody asking you for the last dance, for the last dance of the evening, because the boy who asked you for the last dance, it was kind of understood that he would walk you home.
Yep.
It wouldn't happen nowadays because you wouldn't walk home with a stranger. Nope. But in those days, you walked home with a stranger.
I had the same, but I wasn't of the social dancing. By the time that I was at that stage, it was record hops. So the Scout Hall, I grew up in Larbert, it was the Dobby Hall. So you had your record hops and disco. So exactly the same. It was the last dance, but it wasn't social dancing, but that was where you got your click. And as you say, you got walked home. And that was where it all started.
I remember, Liz, I remember one of my friends, she would go to the dancing and her mother would come and wait outside the dance hall at the end of the dance just to ensure that her daughter had got somebody to walk her home, which was very commendable. But she was more there to ensure that if her daughter had got the last dance, that lad was going to take her daughter home, walk her daughter home. He wasn't just going to give her the last dance and disappear.
Aren't parents embarrassing? I mean, I was in Larbert. The Dobby Hall in Larbert was considered much too risky. I was not allowed to go to the Dobby Hall for the disco there. But for some reason, my parents thought it was less dangerous to get on a train and go to a youth club in Linlithgow, which was run by the relations of a girl in my class at school. It was wild. And so, you know, the rationale of some parents in that, you know, it's not acceptable to go to the Dobby Hall on your doorstep, but you can get on a train and go to Linlithgow. I don't know.
It was like which picture house you were allowed to go to and which picture house was not acceptable.
Maybe
because it had the chummy seats at the back of the picture house that you didn't go, weren't allowed to go to that one.
I always think when I go to Bangkok, when you go to the cinemas in Bangkok, in the cinemas there, the posh ones, they've got these beautiful soft seats which go back, and you get blankets, and it's just like a bed. And I always think wouldn't happen in Scotland.
No. Well, they did have the chummy seats, which were the seats for two in the back row of the pictures. Ooh.
I've never seen that.
Oh, no, Liz, as I say, you're a little bit younger. They took them out because they realised that it was perhaps not the right thing to be happening in the picture house.
They'll come back again.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah. Well, I have to say that this year, 12th of July this year, we celebrate our 40th wedding anniversary. Oh.
Gosh.
As we say in Scotland, if it was murder, I'd be out by now.
Yes. And that's your Ruby wedding.
It is.
I hope Brian knows.
It is.
Yes.
If he doesn't, he soon will do.
Yes.
But we've exceeded the average because, you know, where we're talking about marriages, looking at the other side of it, the dispatches, the divorce, again, official registered statistics, it stayed fairly constant in the 30s, the low 30s, but the divorce rate had been coming down slowly. It peaked at 13,000 in 2006, and it's been coming down very slowly. But my goodness, what did COVID and lockdown do to divorce rates?
It must have been quite hard for some people over lockdown, everybody being in the one house and no escape route. So yes, they skyrocketed, didn't they?
Yeah, as soon as people were out of the pandemic, you know, the number they call the first Monday of the year, when people return to work in the legal profession, they call it Divorce Monday, because that's where all the inquiries come in and people go online making inquiries and it soars and whatever, you know, with Christmas. So it's always high after Christmas, but extend that Christmas period to the whole of lockdown and the numbers just skyrocketed.
Yeah. Well, I suppose the first Monday after in the new year, that must be a new year resolution. I'm getting rid of them this year. Or I'm getting rid of her this year.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in my own case, my daughter had just got into a relationship shortly before COVID, and her partner had just gone through a divorce. But the another side of the pandemic and lockdown was that both had to go back into the same house because they had to homeschool the children. So they had to share, you know, try and conduct their jobs from home and school the children at the same time. So that was a terrible time for all concerned, you know, having made the difficult decision to divorce and separate and then being forced to come together once again in the same house.
Yeah, because also at the early days of lockdown, if they hadn't done that, you wouldn't see the children.
Exactly. Yeah. Yep. And both of them in employment, demanding jobs. So it wasn't fair to expect, you know, that just one partner would school the children. So they had to share it.
Well, I think fortunately, hopefully, Liz, these days are behind us now and that we can, you know, crack on with trying to get back to normality in 2023 and people will be able to go out and hold hands and peck on the cheek as it was in my day and hopefully your day, Liz. But nowadays it's quite different.
Yeah, but I suppose the upside of I mean, it must have been dreadful for people in their late teens and your young people that they weren't allowed to have the time that they would have expected, you know, going to university, starting a job, you know, that time where, you know, you're looking for love and romance and good times. So the upside was that when lockdown finished, the number of your people were out and about and the number of marriages exploded because people had put off their weddings for so long that was the happy side of lockdown.
Yes. I was just thinking that, yes, going to university with the COVID, that really put a different slant on it because when I went to university, you join clubs and things and that's where you met people. You know, I remember you didn't know this, Liz, but I was Edinburgh University's novice junior ladies fencing champion.
I did not know that.
No, you didn't know that. And the reason I was the only girl.
You were the only one
who went fencing because I actually joined the fencing club because I fancied two of the fencers, the men fencers. So I thought the only way to kind of get into their space would be to join the club that they were so much the part of it. So I was the ladies, novice, junior fencing champion of Edinburgh University for somewhere in the 60s, can't remember. But that's what you did. If the man or the woman allowed you into their space, their kind of, you know, special space, like the fencing club or the tennis club or even walking in the hills, that showed that there was a bit of a seriousness about it.
Oh, a euphemism. If you let you into their space, very into good. Space, well, that certainly doesn't surprise me about you, Helen. But one little tip, you know, for anybody listening, you know, if they want to make it last and reach the 40-year mark, all the statistics show that Scottish couples who choose a humanist wedding are less likely to divorce. Now, this is another new introduction since our day. It's a non-religious ceremony, but it's conducted by a humanist celebrant. And the celebrant sort of takes the non-religious values, they get to know the couple and their beliefs, and they're able to do a very personal wedding. And the statistics show that that's more successful in terms of less divorces.
That's interesting, because possibly because of that, because it's a personal one, that each couple, each person in the couple have got to really think very carefully about what is the importance of this wedding to me and what is the importance of the man or the woman that I'm marrying. You've got to really think of it, whereas before you could sometimes get a script for a wedding, can't you?
Yeah, now when you watch all these American programmes with their carefully written vows, I think that's another thing that's taken off. But that's another interesting difference between Scotland and England, because although you could have a humanist ceremony in England, it's not legally recognised. So you would still need to have a separate civil service, whereas in Scotland, you know, you do have the legal recognition and you can sign the official legal document and register that relationship. So big differences between Scotland and England.
That's right. And, you know, all to do with love.
Yeah, but just coming after the great success of Scottish rugby beating English rugby at Twickenham this weekend.
My golly, wasn't that fabulous?
The competitions. Right, so something else, you know, apart from rugby, that Scots excel at, you know, moving on to from the serious statistics, moving on to a few light-hearted statistics. And in April 2022, a poll that was carried out showed that of 2,000 who admitted to having a holiday romance, they revealed that the Scots are the best lovers in the world.
Wow. Wow, there you go.
And we beat not just the English, the Welsh, the Irish, but also the French, the Italians and the Americans.
Oh, there's Scotland a surprise,
up there,
yes.
With a score of 43%. Yeah.
Oh, as I say, the Scots who weren't really surprised about that. They kind of went against their normal humility. They said, oh, that's no bad. That's no bad.
Yeah, they were quite pleased that they had got this. So going on to think about what it is that makes Scots such good lovers. Why are they highly regarded in the world? And of course, one of the first things you think about, which everybody says, the Scottish accent.
Yes, you and sometimes you, as a Scot, you're kind of thinking of the accent. You're thinking, well, I suppose it might be sexy, but I don't even know a word that they're saying. You know, some of the really strong accents, but you know, I think Sean Connery maybe had a lot to do with it, with his accent in the James Bond films.
You know, a lot of our Scottish heartthrobs are very strong Scottish accents. But also, you know, I remember in the days when you had the call centres before it was all outsourced to Asia, but the Scottish voice was recognised as very pure, and it was reassuring in a crisis, trustworthy. So that was why people liked it. But for me, the way in which you tell a Scot, even if they haven't been living in Scotland for years and years, and my own daughter is a good example of this, although they may tend to lose their Scottish accent, it's still the rolling R. So when a Scot says, I've been all round the world, and so it's and great. Those are the two words for me. And my daughter's still world and great. So you listen out for it, the way that the Scots pronounce those two words.
Yeah. But yes, the other thing about, you know, dating a Scot is that you don't need to dress to impress, because we're used to just going out for dressing for the weather, because that's what we do. You know, the flat shoes for the girls, flat shoes and the heavy coats. We might carry our heels with us, but you can just go out and be comfortable.
I think, Helen, that you're showing your age again, because you go to Glasgow or Dunfermline and the girls certainly don't dress for the weather. No. The boys maybe do, but oh my goodness, when you see the girls out on a night out these days, they've got hardly anything on.
No, I remember getting on the Clockwork Orange in Glasgow with a group of Americans, the Rick Steves tour, and the girls and boys got on to go into Glasgow for their Glasgow night out, their Saturday night out. And the girls were, as you say, I think, wearing skirts that could not be shorter and, you know, midriff, you know, bare midriffs, but they were such fun. The boys had their jackets on, their coats on and their boots on, but the girls, I think they all carry their shoes home at night, don't they? They wear their peary heels to start with and then go in their bare feet.
Yeah, and you get the night pastors out on the streets in the big cities with flip-flops that they're giving away to the girls as they're walking about on all the broken glass and their bare feet. Yeah. No, it changed days again, Helen. Changed we're showing days. Out showing our age.
Oh, but yes, but it's all good fun. All good fun, Liz.
And of course, a lot of the ladies looking for the Scots men will be expecting to see a kilt.
Yes. And in fact, most men will wear the kilt at some time, but not for their day-to-day lives.
Yeah, but one of the other things that's very attractive about the Scots when it comes to love, so they say, is that they've got a very, very good sense of humour. And they say that humour is the way to a person's heart. You know, it's more important than muscles or, I don't know, good teeth or whatever. Yeah.
You know, female. They sound like horses.
But the Scots are famous for their sarcastic humour, I think, their irreverent sense of humour.
Yes, and I think that's something that kind of always kind of defuses a situation by just, they're very clever at that. If things are getting a bit tense, they can just defuse it with a bit of humour so that everybody goes back to normal, resets, and you know, they can begin their conversation or relationship again. They just don't take themselves seriously.
No, it's the banter. And I think one of the ways that you know that you're getting close to someone is when they get to the stage where they're taking the mickey out of you and the banter is good. So, I mean, it gives rise to many of the Scottish comedians. Billy Connolly's probably most famous about them. So people like the Scottish banter. Also, another feature about Scotland is that the people are incredibly hospitable.
Yes, and you know, it used to be the big, oh, goodness me, milestone in a relationship when you were invited home for tea. But actually, it's not so much of a milestone. It doesn't necessarily mean, and the next step is the ring on your finger. It means that, actually, you're quite nice. I'm taking you home for the family because I'm a family person. I want their approval as well.
Yeah, we've already talked about the dancing. The Scots like to party. We're good at throwing a good party. Hogmanay is a good example of that. But also, increasingly popular now amongst young people, the old-fashioned ceilidh.
Oh, yes. I'm so pleased that that's come back, Liz, that people are going out and, you know, the dancing takes place, the singing, the entertaining. And it's good because people can actually get to know each other at a ceilidh.
Yep. You know, it's very popular. And then, of course, the next morning after you've had a bit to drink, we've got good hangover cures. Yeah. And Scottish men are getting better at the cooking. You know, they're perhaps not as good as the Italians or the Latinos, but again, yeah, you know, it's a big part of the culture. Yeah. Right? So if he's inviting you for dinner, you know that you're in there, that you're lucky. And of course, you know, when you're really getting serious, because a Scotsman will invite you into their, what was it you said, their space. You know, and the space, the sacred place for a lot of Scottish men is their pub, the place that they go to with their buddies.
Oh, yes. But that again, is fairly the way it's all changed, because in my day, Liz, the last place on earth that anybody would want to take a girlfriend would be to the pub, because that was very much men only, and it was a space. And that maybe shows why even today that pubs have opened up and they're more family friendly, they're more, you know, open to everybody, that men, if they invite you to their special pub, that is harking back to the days that women weren't allowed in pubs. I'm bringing you to my special one.
I wonder at the differences in just that small number of years between us. I think you were maybe moving in a different class of society from me, Helen, because I think there's quite a difference.
Oh, did you go to the pub, Liz?
That was where, yeah, our first date. I got taken to the pub in Musselburgh, the hole in the wall.
Oh, well, my mother would have not allowed me to be your friend.
And then, of course, there's about the Scots looks. And, you know, when you think of the Scottish, first of all, that they are, by and large, they're the shortest people in the UK. Yeah, Scotsman, the average height is 5'8". So we're not tall and blonde-haired or whatever. Highest concentration of people with red hair, red-haired gene carriers. Yes. Highest concentration of people with green eyes. This is the good old Celtic connections in here. So, you know, Scots have a particular look about them, but of course we've got such a diverse look because we've had so many different races like the Norse, the Vikings coming in.
Yes, and now we're such a diverse society that we're, you intermarrying with, people from different cultures, different places in the world that have come to settle in Scotland. And it's, you know, this, the red hair, the green eyes, is it Brave, that cartoon film?
Yeah.
You know, that is kind of stereotypical, is kind of mellowing a little bit now.
Yeah.
But our characteristics, Liz, are quite different. As we said before, sense of humour, forthright, we say what we feel. And we've got this reputation of being a bit tight-fisted. But actually, we're just frugal. We're just counting the pennies. But we're tight-fisted.
We've mentioned it before, but we do swear all the time, profanity.
My two children are disgusting. They did not learn it from me. But they're in their 40s and they're still swearing. In fact, even their children are saying, don't swear. Remember, we're children. The children are well in their teens or in their 20s. Yeah. But
My daughter is exactly the same, she gets appalled at us as well. So I'm sorry. But a lot of the time, it's funny, you know, the way in which profanity is used. So, we do have the sense of humour. It might be very sarcastic. It may be pessimistic. But and the reputation of being tight-fisted isn't true either, because Scots are recognised as the most generous for charities in the UK. So,
And the other thing is that the Scots, we don't like pretension or anything that's fake, which is why I think a number of celebrities, have enjoyed living in Scotland, because we just see them say, oh yeah, that's so-and-so, and carry on with our business. We don't, crowd them out, rush into them or anything like that. We just, oh well, that's your job, that's fine.
Yep. So if you are coming to seek love in Scotland, right, a few tips, three tips, right? First of all, don't call us Scotch. We're Scots. No. Scotch is whiskey.
That's my wee lecture on every tour.
Worse still, don't ever call us English. There's a tendency from people from overseas to refer to the whole of the United Kingdom as English. That's a no-no.
No. And whatever you do, do not call a kilt a skirt.
Yep, unless you like hospital food.
Exactly, yes, as you say.
But no, it's not a skirt. It's not men in skirts. It's a kilt. So maybe some people will come trying to find love in Scotland. And if they do, a few words associated with love in Scotland. Helen, have you got a word of a week?
Well, I just remember, Liz, going back a few years, that you'd go to the dancing, as I said, and you'd hope to get a lumber. Mm-hmm. L-U-M-B-E-R. That means you get a partner, get somebody to, so you'd meet somebody who would walk you home, and perhaps next week you might meet them at the dancing again. So a lumber is my word of the week.
And of course the chat up line to get the lumber: are you dancing? No, are you asking?
Yeah.
I'm asking. I'm dancing.
That's right.
Well, you're a dancer. And of course, lots of words. We've got lumber, we've got click. But another one that I like is a winch, right? Because people are saying, are you winching? Which means, are you stepping out? But a winch is also a snog. So a winch can be used in different ways. So winch, W-I-N-C-H, is either a passionate kiss, a snog, or winching, as in stepping out with somebody.
I think the statue at Buchanan Street bus station in Glasgow is called The Winch. It's the couple having a wee farewell kiss.
Yeah.
It's a lovely statue if anybody's there.
Yeah,
I think it's
called The Winch. She gets on the bus and goes home.
That's right.
Well, love is in the air. I hope that all our listeners out there have a lovely Valentine's Day and they're successful in finding love.
Yes. Well, and happy Valentine's Day, everybody. And goodbye.
Bye-bye.
And there we have it, the end of another episode of Scottish Blethers. If you'd like to join us on social media, you can find us on Facebook and Instagram as @ScottishBlethers. And if you'd like to leave a review, please do so on your podcast platform of choice. It's cheery bye from me.
Ta-ta the moo from me.
And if I don't see you through the week, I'll see you through the windy from me.
Bye.
See ya.
Bye.